Welcome to the Evidence Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this January the 20th, 2011. And the reason I said it that way is because last night, I don't think anybody but one listener caught me saying 2010. We get so used to digits in the year that we forget even a couple of weeks into the year. So I made a mistake last night. I just corrected it. And on the East Coast, it is now the 21st, as well as in the Central Time Zone. I'd like to welcome all those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network. Again, we have two guests for you tonight. One who has been on the show many, many, many times, Mr. Ken Adachi, and this will be his fourth appearance tonight on the show, all the way from British Columbia. That's over in Canada, for those of you who are map-deprived, those of you who studied where the former, I think it was Miss Teen USA contestant from South Carolina in 2006, where she said that the rock and South Africa should have our maps so we can learn how to read them. And something along those lines. Anyway, we appreciate having Z.S. Livingstone with us again tonight as well. We're going to get into some technologies and how they're being used. And speaking of technologies, I'd like to open up with a very technological piece played by a late bass player, probably one of the best ever to walk the face of the earth. He was a stylist, an impressionist, and a pioneer in developing new techniques for the electric bass. This is a song that may remind you of what digital electronics sound like if you could put it into real music. This is Okomkole y Trompa. if you recognize that harmonic style there, that is none other than the late Jaco Pastorius from his album of the same name, Okumkole e Trompa, is the name of that piece. I think that's what it might sound like to be inside a digital device and to be music and to be repeatedly cranking out numbers and messages and sounds that really divert our attention from what's really going on and even exert a power over us. We're going to be talking about that with our guest tonight. I invite back very gladly the editor and webmaster of educate-yourself.org, metaphysician, journalist, investigative journalist, and also the creator of many interesting energy devices, my good friend, Mr. Ken Adachi. Ken, welcome to the show.
Hi, Don. Thank you very much for having us back again tonight.
Well, it's my pleasure. I'm going to go ahead and bring our other guest on as well so that we can get into a sort of a back and forth chat about this issue that I've introduced. He is also an essayist. I consider him a journalist because even though he's writing his work in the term, in the form of an essay, he's actually doing the investigative work behind the scenes that qualifies him to be a journalist. And his work is published at Ken's website, again, educate-yourself.org, and his good friend has been working with him to help him get his material out there for a number of years now, and he's getting quite a collection. And I invite back again from last night's show as a continuation, Mr. Zuranova Star Livingstone. ZS, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And how are you doing this evening?
Actually, I'm a little bit sore. I spent about 6-7 hours shoveling snow. We had another dump of snow here.
Oh, it's everywhere. And it's even going down south. Very strange weather. And I'm sure we'll probably talk about that a little bit. I know that both of you, Ken and ZS, you have been looking at the issue of, let's say, bioelectrical emanation of different frequencies that are being used in various technologies. And a scientist, Dr. Martin Blank, recently released some information. Now, recently meaning around the middle of last November, Dr. Blank is the past president of the Bioelectromagnetics Society. He's got two PhDs from Columbia University in physical chemistry and another from Cambridge University in colloid science. And that would be biology, physics, and chemistry. He's an associate professor at Columbia University and in their Department of Physiology and Cellular Biophysics, and a researcher in bioelectromagnetics. He's authored books on stress proteins for the Bio Initiative Report, and he's edited the Paraphysiology Special Issue on the Biological Effects of Electromagnetic Fields. Now, in short, what he says is that the cellular devices we're using, and of course the Gwen towers are part of that, and all of the Wi-Fi equipment has the capacity, and there is astounding evidence that this technology can unravel one's DNA. Do either of you want to open up this topic with your own experience or knowledge in that area? Ken, possibly?
Yeah, I can briefly touch on that subject. During the mid-1990s, I attended a weekly meeting. It was called a breakfast meeting. It was hosted by Dr. Bob Beck, who I met here in California in 1994. He was an interesting person. He was quite a scientist. He had done a lot of work in the previous decades for the government, particularly, and in many secret projects. His specialty had to do with technologies that concerned biofeedback systems and how the brain works, and particularly how the bioelectric functions of electronics can interreact with the brain and the nervous system. And he developed a lot of information, much of it kept secret by the government, but he also revealed quite a bit of information as well in the talks and lectures he gave there at this breakfast meeting, as well as conferences that he did often during the 90s at health expos and that sort of thing. And so I started to become more aware of this phenomena. There was a fellow named Dr. Robert Becker who came out with two very important books also in the 90s that talked about the electric fields of the body. One is called The Body Electric and the other is called Cross Currents. And they're very important books. And if anyone wants to learn more about how biological systems interact with electromagnetic fields, you can't do better than study those two books. They're really chock full of very important research data. Well, anyway, Beck had mentioned that there's a limit or a threshold of, let's call it, electromagnetic pollution that a person can sustain and still function normally. And then after you get beyond a certain level of this saturation, biological systems begin to go south. And he was talking about that in the 90s because he had done so much of this research for the government, the CIA particularly. So he knew well of how human, you know, the body systems, or any animals for that matter, not just humans, we have a limited capacity for how much pollution we could stand, the frequency, the type of signals, the fields that we're exposed to, et cetera. And we have allowed, or the government, I should say, more correctly, has allowed the proliferation of the growth of this whole telecommunications industry, and specifically talking about microwave energy systems now, to simply grow, expand unchecked to now what I feel is a dangerous degree. If you recall, cell phone towers really began to spring up like weeds all over North America, for that matter, the whole world. But we saw them here in America really start to spring up, let's say, from 2002 forward, perhaps 2001 to 2002. But they just went up everywhere. And it was within a matter of a year or two, you would see them every half mile or so. They became ubiquitous. So suddenly were these, let's say, no sufficient field tests were done to first study the long-term effect of immersing human populations in this large cross-current of electromagnetic radiation from microwave towers. No studies were done at all. And the federal government went further and they, let's say, took local jurisdiction out of the control loop, so that if a state or a city or a township didn't want these towers going up, they just passed a federal law that bypassed local jurisdiction, again, without any real studies. And I had around 2002, 2003, I can't remember exactly, but I looked into the subject more, and I found it's either an Australian or a New Zealander. His name was Dr. Neil Cherry. he had done some very important work in recognizing exactly the damage that is caused by these, particularly these microwave fields from using cell phones. And he had published some very important data in the 90s. And he died unexpectedly at a rather young age. And I'm very suspicious as to why he died. But he died somewhere around 24, 25, something like that, unexpectedly. And his work, it seems, was buried. It did have a presence on the internet for a time, and then it just wasn't there anymore. It took me quite a bit of time to dig it out of archives. I was looking and looking. It took a lot of time. I finally found, let's say, his better data, and I posted it to my website. Now, since that time, there have been many groups, particularly this one fellow in Germany who he had a newsletter. I was receiving his newsletter quite often, who was trying to alert the public to the growing dangers of this proliferation of microwave devices, of cell phones. And now what we've had in the last few years is the proliferation of wireless devices to use with our computer, et cetera. I posted more than a few articles on this topic. I tried to throw in my two cents that it is very foolish to continue to immerse yourself further into these fields. And I don't have wireless anything in my home. I connect to the internet via cable. I don't use wireless keyboards or wireless mouse or wireless routers. Nothing. I'm getting enough radiation from just, you know, the routine stuff that we're immersed in. So
You know, it's been widely known for many years that sitting within a 6-foot proximity to a television set, particularly a color television set, subjects you to all kinds of X-rays, and then sleeping near an alarm clock, again having it, let's say, in a vicinity of 3 to 5 feet, probably is going to subject you to a stray electromagnetic field. It runs the clock, but it interferes with the body system. And I think what actually happens in either of these cases, and we're talking about analog devices here, we're not even talking about digital necessarily, and microwave frequencies, they must attack the aura and the etheric body of an individual. That's what's not seen, but it likely weakens it or opens holes and allows illness and other anomalies to occur.
It definitely, again, Robert Becker's book discusses this in great detail. Mm-hmm. Yes, if you're in these fields, for instance, the alarm clock is a good example of the 60 hertz, you know, electromagnetic field that's radiated from the power supply that's coming from the wall outlet where you plug the clock into. Mm-hmm. And you're absolutely right. An electric alarm clock is a good example. It radiates an enormous field around it. As you say, it might be 4 to 5 feet. So if you really want to be safe from this field, you have to put an electric alarm clock on a bureau on the opposite side of the room from where your bed is, not next to the bed, as most people have it.
Mm-hmm. And just to be safe, just to be safe, say 8 to 10 feet. And that could be the opposite side of the average bedroom.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly where ours is. It's on the bureau on the far side of the room, as you say, a minimum of 3 to 4 feet distance from the television, because mm-hmm. the television has high voltage applied, typically 25 to 30,000 volts, applied to the tube that you're watching the screen on. Now, this doesn't apply to newer plasma TVs. I'm talking about the more traditional CRT screens.
Yeah.
There's high voltage there. And yes, you're getting X-rays within, let's say, 3 feet or so. So mm-hmm. a minimum of 4 to 5 to 6 feet away from a traditional TV screen.
Yeah.
And refrigerators put out electric fields.
You know, most people think of in terms of their head, you know, they're watching TV.
Yes.
Think my head is this far away. When you're lying down in a bed, you the rest of your body, if you're 6 feet tall,
That's right.
And the thing is, 8 feet away from your head, it's going to still reach part of your body. Your body is still going to absorb that energy because those fields are superimposed within and without each other, and are pulsating. Now, like you said, one is pulsating at 60 hertz, and then you have the frequency of the Earth. You have any electromagnetic anomalies that are going on with all other sorts of technology simultaneously. Wireless units, you know, the average Wi-Fi might reach from 50 to 150 feet, let's say. Well, if your neighbor's Wi-Fi is on, you may be getting bombarded.
Absolutely.
You see?
You're absolutely correct there. And there's a little device that a mutual friend of ZSL's and myself, a guy named Al Gray, alerted to me about 2002 that I should just mention now, because people, if you want to measure these electromagnetic fields, which are very small, there's a little device called the Zap Checker that you can get from a website called Zap, Z-A-P, checker.com. Last time I checked, which was a few years ago, the price was somewhere around $89 or $100, somewhere in that. Well worth it, because it can detect very tiny and, more important, very high frequency magnetic fields, which of course is what we're talking about when we're talking about microwaves. We're talking about very high frequency. And if you want to physically check your house, your room, your bedroom, get yourself a Zap Checker. It will tell you the intensity of these fields, where they're located. It'll show you where they are not located. It'll show you, let's say, electromagnetically non-active zones, which is where you would want to have your bed or your sofa, or, you know, where your comfortable area, wherever you're spending a lot of time in. You would want that to be in a location in your home where you have the least amount of these fields hitting you. And the Zap Checker is an easy way to detect these fields.
And buy one now. Call now and you get two for the price of one.
Yes, I have no connection with them other than it's a wonderful little device.
Yes, kid.
I'm sure ZS is aware of the device I'm referring to.
Yeah, I'm just kidding on that, you know, making light of it. Got to have an urgency there. Plus you get a year's supply of clothespins. Use them for whatever you want. ZS, do you want to respond and add to this topic here? I'm interested in your take on what it does to the body.
I don't have a Zap checker here, but I have a friend who has one, and he's now down in Boulder, Colorado, and he says that he has to use it all the time down there. And he's the one who directed me towards pouring organite. And Ken has talked to Dave Cowan, who's doing a lot of healing work in the Boulder area. And part of his healing work is to check what the electromagnetic smog is around people. And his main advice is just get rid of the microwave, get rid of your TV, get rid of anything you don't need. And we're not at the point of getting rid of the Wi-Fi, because there's a couple of laptop computers around the house here which need the Wi-Fi. And that's about 6 feet from my head. And I think I can actually feel it at times. I can when I pick up a cell phone, which I don't want to do. I don't own a cell phone, but I've had to use them. It actually hurts my hand. It's like the bones are being cooked from the inside out. And I can actually feel when the signal is going out. It's usually about 3 or 4 seconds, and it's off, and the pain goes away, and then the signal goes back on again as it searches again for the signal. So I'm pretty darn sensitive to electromagnetic signals of that. That's in the gigahertz range, isn't it? Or terahertz. It's up there.
Yeah. I think pretty much it's in gigahertz. I know that the cell phones, many of the cell phones, and even some cordless phones, wireless systems within the house, right. It may be plugged into an ingress of the actual telephone signal going into a modular plug, let's say, and then you tap into the modular plug and plug a cordless. There are multiple station cordless phones that some people have. So that radiation is going throughout the whole house.
Right.
And beyond, if it can reach outside, if you can take your cordless phone outside and walk a fair distance from your house, 50, 60 or more feet, then that field is everywhere inside the house.
Yes, we do have one cordless one, and I've checked, and we can get to two doors over, and it starts cutting out. So that's actually more than 60 feet.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying an average one. You must have a good one. Because I talk to some people that can't even keep it on the line in the house. You know,
this one doesn't hurt my hand when I pick it up, but I have a friend who I did some work for, and they have four mated cordless phones in the house that hurt my hand when and hurt the ear when I put it up to the ear. And I just don't want to be anywhere near it. I'm very brief on those type of phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
I'm using a corded in Skype line. It's not cordless, and the mouse in front of me is not cordless. But mm-hmm. I'm just looking around.
Aside from the cooking feature, ZS, what would you say might be happening to one's body or one's aura, or have we covered that already?
No, I haven't touched that at all. You can feel pressure on the auric field, and it does create holes or disturbances and dark spots.
Mm-hmm.
And pushing away the auric field. And often you have to just leave that field and shake it out, and it takes some actually a concentrated effort, a grounding action, mm-hmm. tai chi like grounding,
mm-hmm.
In order to get into a prayerful state where you feel that you're in communication to high self.
Mm-hmm. One could roll up one's sleeves and rinse their arms to the fingertips, let's say from just above the elbow down to the fingertips. That also releases if you shake the water off of your fingertips.
Yes.
It sort of neutralizes it.
Right.
So that's a very simple solution right there. That really works.
Yes, anytime you run water over the body, this is why, you know, when taking a shower, it absolutely refreshes the aura. Mm. And it literally flushes negative energy from the aura down the drain. And that's why you notice you feel good, but it's because you've brightened up your aura. Mm-hmm. And while the thought's in my mind, I just like to mention that an idea which Zias has often mentioned to me in previous conversations about this over the years is that you can ground these energies out of your body by physically being in touch with the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that easy to do here. If you live somewhere where you can walk barefoot on yes. grass, you're that's literally right. touching the earth, and because of the moisture of the grass, etc., you're creating a good contact with the earth. And by walking on grass in a park, wherever you can do that for 20 minutes or half hour or so, you will definitely assist your body in draining these high frequency energies that essentially get circulated in your body because they're stuck. There's nowhere for them to go. We wear shoes, we're insulated from the earth, etc. And by actually walking on with bare feet, of course, on the grass for quite a while. We live in an area where we have a common green where it's easy for me to get to it. And of course the weather here is warm. year-round in Southern California. So if you're in it, if you're in a place where you can do this, if you can even walk along water, let's say you live by a beach, just walk through, you know, the water there where it's splashing against the shore, you're absolutely grounding yourself. This is a very good thing to keep in mind, particularly if you find that you're having trouble with your nerves, you're becoming hypersensitive to electromagnetic radiation. Most people can pick up that they're becoming sensitized to it when, for instance, let's say you go into a department store that has a lot of fluorescent lights and you suddenly feel yourself losing energy. It's from those fluorescent lights that's radiating one of these smog fields that Zeus referred to, and that can and will weaken you. If you're standing in front of a copying machine and you start noticing yourself getting weak, it's because of the radiation from the machine is knocking down your energy and your aura. So you want to remove yourself, but that should tell you you're absorbing too much of this stuff and you have to do something to ground yourself. Even taking a bath with salt in it, you know, sea salt, which you can buy at most supermarkets there, any type of salt, Epsom salt, whatever, and get in that bath, you will ground these energies out into that water. And, it's a way to discharge.
Yeah. Now, weather permitting, it's very invigorating to spend several days out in the woods, say camping, for example, just to go to an ordinary campground. But then don't hang out in a tent with your cell phone on.
Right.
A lot of people do that. Or mountain climbing is another thing. Swimming. There are a lot of activities that you can engage in that actually cause you to be more grounded. But certainly walking barefoot is the simplest and easiest to do. You can do it anywhere except in Washington, D.C. You've got to wear at least thongs. And you need hip boots. They're recommended. Comments, ZS?
Okay. Talking about mountain climbing, right here, one of the most we have, of course, a few cell phone towers. Fortunately, we don't have any live TV broadcasts here. One FM or two FM stations. So for a town 15,000, our electromagnetic pollution is very low on that scale. But we're right on the green line, during the 1950s, there was a whole series of three bands of radar facilities built by NORAD. One was called the Distant Early Warning Line up in the Arctic, along the Arctic Ocean. The other one was on the tree line, about halfway, about 60 degrees north. And then about 51 degrees or 2 degrees north of the U.S. border was what's called the Green Line, and that's where we are. And there's a six-story tall radar weather ball, which was upgraded in 2000, and it's plugged directly into Cheyenne Mountain in NORAD. And I've gone up there a few times planting tower busters, organite tower busters. I've got a dozen of them around there, some of my best ones. And my initial two trips up there, I could just feel the buzz in the air from that radar unit. So mountain climbing in the area around here, you're going to get zapped by that by NORAD.
Well, yeah, of course, you want to make sure there aren't these Gwen towers around, or like you just said, something that appears to be a radar tower. Look for the ball on the top, huh? Right. And I suppose any antenna array probably would subject you to frequencies being received or emitted. And if they can be received, they're there anyway.
Right.
You know, so.
I can imagine this dish is actually tracking our friends upstairs all the way past the moon.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And of course, they can communicate with satellites that are out there and the things that they haven't told us about that aren't satellites that are out there. So, right. You know, various types of craft. So we're all three in agreement that using cell phones is dangerous. And from what I understand, that Dr. Martin Blank said is that basically it's an irreversible type of damage done to the DNA strands in one's body, and it creates a new DNA strand, which is now the new memory of the individual, and one can just determine with a little bit of careful thought that that might induce disease of different types, or that it may cripple one's ability. Ken was mentioning the neurological system, and of course that would be one aspect. And then, you know, we've been talking about the aura. What really happens? Ken hit the nail on the head. He said you feel fatigue. Well, when these openings occur in one's aura, and then the electromagnetic radiation can get in there, that facilitates also other types of ethereal entities to enter into the picture, sort of like parasites. And I feel strongly that that induces the problems that drug addicts and alcoholics have, is that they've damaged their aura and their etheric body to the extent that these holes are like leaks in insulation of a house. When the wind blows and it gets cold or rainy, that energy is moving in places that you wouldn't necessarily want it to go to. So in essence, that's what weakens the body. It weakens the immune system. And if it's not corrected, one actually is losing the very thing that's keeping them alive, and that's called life force.
Yes.
Okay. Either of you want to comment on that? Because I think this ties into everything that's happening to us.
Well, you've opened up a very important aspect to the discussion, Don. Yes, that's an entirely another dimension beyond the purely, let's say, physiological disabling parts of electromagnetic pollution. We're talking about another type of damage to the aura that can allow unfriendly entities from other dimensions to perhaps gain access on some level. I believe that's quite true what you're saying. Some people have experienced, let's say, undesired visits by entities from other dimensions, in which it occurred because they had put themselves in some sort of electromagnetically stressed environment, and that seems to allow the entrance to take place. So you're saying something very important there. To just revert, just to get back to the cell phone dangerous concern again, I just like to add to the notion that the Neil Cherry studies that I mentioned to you, mm-hmm. that were done even in the 90s, late 90s, early 2000 era, had shown there was definitely changes in to the brain, to certain protein structures in the brain. And he too, and this was very disturbing to read this, found that once these changes occurred, at least according to his studies, they did not reverse. This should concern people. And a little piece I put up 4 or 5 or 6 months ago, I can't remember exactly, which I was essentially just wrote a 1 or 2 page article about the concerns of cell phone usage. I had mentioned, and parents need to listen to this, children, particularly young children, but even teenagers, should not have their own cell phone. To give a small child, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, their own cell phone is extremely foolish. These kids have growing systems that they're already walking in in an environment that's currently overloaded with electromagnetic pollution. But to bring it close to their head like that and put the cell phone right against their ear, they're radiating the microwaves right into their brain. And I'm afraid that there is going to be an absolute explosion of brain cancers around the world, because cell phones are used in, you know, the most remote areas of Africa, for instance. Native tribes, they have cell phones today. So there's going to be an explosion of brain cancers as a result of this foolish use of these cell phones, you know, in the last decade or so, and in the decade to come. Parents, do not allow your kids to use a cell phone. Get a old-fashioned hardwire phone that plugs into the, you know, into the phone company's outlet, and have your kids talk on the phone that way. If for emergency purposes only, you must use a cell phone, and this applies to anybody, child or adult, don't put the cell phone right against your ear. Plug in that little wire that has the microphone and the earpiece attached to it, and put that in your ear and hold the phone out at a distance if you must use a cell phone. They have a type of earphone adapter that uses a plastic tube in the last 8, 10, or 12 inches that essentially is amplifying the sound at a little speaker on the far end of the tube, and then the plastic tube carries the sound waves into your ear. So you're not carrying the electrical signal to your ear where it's, you know, it's being converted by a little mini speaker. No, you're carrying the sound waves to the ear. So the actual speaker is dangling at the opposite end of that plastic tube. Mm-hmm. That's far safer if you must use a cell phone. But to give kids cell phones, it just bothers me to no end. When I drive around town here and I see kids coming out of school, they all got a cell phone to their ear, talking to their friends. Yeah, and I'm just, it's just bothering me so much, because this is a huge danger that's going to make itself known.
Well, you know, now you open up another can of worms, and or you started opening it, and I grabbed the can opener. I'm going to finish opening it. It's you know, you take the cell phone one step further. They come out with all sorts of devices to hook it into your cigarette lighter to charge it. It's got an audio output that goes into an auxiliary input of your car radio, or your car radio CD player or MP3 player, and you have people getting one or two different versions of satellite transmission. We won't mention the names, but you can get satellite radio as well. And then they're setting up these systems. Forget about 1,000 watts of power. They're going to 2,500. Even up to 5,000 watts of power in the trunk of their car. And the whole car becomes a low-frequency chamber, if you want to call it that.
It's a microwave oven. If you're talking on a cell phone while riding in your car, imagine yourself sitting in your microwave oven, because that's what's happening. Microwave signals bounce off metal, and it's reverberating inside the car. Mm-hmm. If you are in a car, need to talk on the cell phone, stop the car, get out of the car, and talk in the free air. You're going to get a 20th of the radiation that you're going to absorb when you're sitting in the car.
Yeah. So I thought I would mention that, because your explanation just took me right to that vision of that car, that low rider going through the hood and banging your front doors and your windows as it passes through, even though there are laws against that. You know, it goes on. Now imagine being inside that vehicle if it's shaking your house. If it's shaking the foundation of your house, think of the low frequencies that were involved in that. They cannot be healthy for anyone being subjected to that.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. When they get to that low a frequency. Of course, they're called ELFs, extra low frequency. You are playing with fire. The power level is making a huge difference. Unless you have a background in physics or electronics, you might not know that electromagnetic energy, these fields, are inversely proportional to distance. Now, what that means is that when the power is 1,000 watts, let's say, from a transmitter, you have so much distance from that transmitter, which will have an effective field. But as you walk away from the transmitter, the power is the effect on your body is falling away at an inverse ratio.
Mm-hmm.
But it works the other way. When you start jacking up the power, it also increases, and you've got to be very, very careful. It's similar to the logarithmic way in which the Richter scale for earthquakes are derived. You know,
mm-hmm.
a 5.0 Richter, let's say a 10.0 Richter is not exactly double of a 5.0. No. It's a logarithmic scale. It's which a huge jump in
each
power.
Each tenth of a point is 63 times the amount of
right.
energy.
Exactly.
So going from 5.0 to 5.1, 5.1 is 63 times stronger than a 5.0.
Thank you. Right.
And
No, it's actually it's between 5.0 and 6.0. It's 30 times. That's I think 63 would be too much of a too steep of a logarithmic climb.
No, I've known this for some time, unless we were being lied to about it.
I believe it is a very large jump from every 5.1, 5.2. It's a big jump.
Right. I know it's a big jump.
Even 30 times is too much, you know.
Yeah.
But I'll arm wrestle you for it, okay?
Well.
the winner gets a free cell phone. How's that?
Well, anyways, I won't argue about 10.0, and that's a earth that shakes the whole earth.
Yes, right. Of course, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think we're making the point. Aside from how we might disagree, and I suppose I could probably, while you guys are talking, try to research that. But I remember learning that quite some time ago when I was experiencing some earthquakes in Southern California.
Right.
And I remember that there was a very, very important explanation as to why. You know, we had the Whittier quake was a very powerful quake that affected Los Angeles and the San Fernando Valley and the San Gabriel Valley, that whole area. But they felt that all the way up to San Francisco. And just a slight jump by a couple of decimal points really made the difference as to who felt the aftershocks that occurred within a day or two after the initial quake. And, you know, there was a lot of damage from that quake. Nothing like what happened in San Francisco. But we're not playing with small amounts of energy. These are tremendous amounts of energy that can't really be harnessed. We don't have any technology to hold this energy back and keep it from causing damage. And then when you take into account that it's being done intentionally now with the HARP technology and the DARPA program and all of these different technologies being run simultaneously, it's got to be really chaotic. Think about the harmonics that aren't even discussed, that are sort of, as you were mentioning, Ken, you know, it's sort of a resonant pollution that builds up on top of that. You have low frequency standing waves moving, and they travel long distances, and then everything is being bombarded by all these other high frequencies. It's almost like there's no place to escape from it.
An important point. I have a few books here that I've acquired, in which they, essentially, the books is concerned about electromagnetic pollution and the dangers involved in that. And we are at an all-time high now, in certainly in urban areas, of being saturated by these fields because of the exponential growth of these microwave towers, mm-hmm. cell phone towers, and other type of microwave transmissions that you often don't hear about or talk about. But there's ancillary microwave systems that the government uses. They don't necessarily tell the public about them, but that's part of the mix. And it's something that ought to be a concern to people. If the day comes when we once again get the government back under control of the people, something very seriously has to be done to reduce the volume of cell phone towers. Now, I understand that it's going to affect the, let's say, the availability of a cell phone signal and so forth and so on, but the health of humanity is far more important than the convenience that cell phones afford. And the other thing that the public doesn't know is that these towers have power systems that far exceed the need of cell phone communication transmissions. This is another area that, again, the public is not told about, is not privy to, but I remember hearing talks given by Al Bielek in the 1990s in which he was talking about the coming problem with cell phone tower systems, microwaves, because it plays into a mind control scheme that the government has developed and has in the works. And he pointed out that these feeder cables to these radiating antenna that they use on cell phone towers are far larger than they need be for cell phone communication. Cell phone, it's a relatively low power signal will carry quite far for cell phones. Mm-hmm. And he said the thickness of those cables means that there's, a wire in there. There's wires in there that are so large and heavy, they are intended to carry much higher wattage than is required for cell phone communication purposes.
A lot more current, yes. A
lot more current, and that's where we're getting into the hidden agenda of electronic mind control. These tower systems were adapted to that purpose, and when they really want to, turn up the heat and turn on the screws, they can do very substantial things to people using those existing towers of cell phones. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about they can exert a mind-controlled signal that can literally paralyze you if that is their desire. They can triangulate the signal on a single individual if that is their goal. And there are thousands of people in this country, probably tens of thousands of people, who are experiencing what we call psychotronic torture and harassment, in which they are receiving microwave signals and it's causing physical pain and on their body. Whatever the controllers who are controlling this equipment, whatever pain signal, irritation, misery they want to deliver to this victim, they have a frequency for that and they just beam it right to them. Mm-hmm. Well, you can not only do an individual victim, you can beam an entire neighborhood with this signal.
Yeah.
You could cause everyone to fall down flat on the floor because you can paralyze their nervous system so they can't even stand up.
Mm-hmm.
This system is in place. That's why these towers were wired with this high wattage capability. So if they really want to turn on the heat, and they can turn off your car in a second. Any car that's running with a computer in it can be disabled instantly with these tower system. So if they want to, let's say, stop all the traffic, wherever they want to do it, no problem. Just turn this equipment on. And if you want to avoid that, get yourself an old car that doesn't use a computer, that uses a carburetor without fuel injection, just has old-fashioned points in it and a coil, et cetera, and you can drive right through this field, and it won't interfere with your car's operation at all.
Yes. Now, not to change the subject, I want to come back briefly to the Richter scale. Okay. If we're to credit Wikipedia on this, the Richter magnitude scale, also known as the local magnitude scale, assigns a single number to quantify the amount of seismic energy released by an earthquake. It is a base 10 logarithmic scale obtained by calculating the logarithm of the combined horizontal amplitude, shaking amplitude, of the largest displacement from zero on a particular type of seismometer. So, for example, an earthquake that measures 5.0 on the Richter scale has a shaking amplitude 10 times larger than one that measures 4.0. The effective limit of measurement for local magnitude is about 6.8. Now, this gets interesting here. The energy release of an earthquake, which closely correlates to its destructive power, scales with the 3/2 power of the shaking amplitude. Thus, a difference in magnitude of 1.0 is equal to a factor of 31.6 in the energy released.
Okay.
A difference in magnitude of 2.0 is equivalent to a factor of 1,000 in the energy release. You can see that logarithmic scale going up like a ski slope. Okay.
So it's right in between the figure you gave and the figure I gave. It's closer to the figure you gave.
Okay. It's an enormous amount. Are we going to actually be able to ascertain ourselves how much energy that is? I can tell you, if you go through a 6.3 and go through a 6.4, you'll think it's the end of the world. The difference between the two of them.
Right.
And every point after that is every tenth of a point is actually at least 63. This came from the girl over at JPL. I can't remember her name right now, but she was pretty good at this stuff. And there's also a limitation as to where you can read at the local epicenter. In other words, I think you can actually gauge accurately up to 6.8 on the Richter scale. After that, you have to be further away.
Right. So, yeah, and then also when you get above 8, they have to sit back and take the readings from the whole world to figure out how much energy was put out in all directions.
Yes.
Like the 1964 earthquake in Gulf of Alaska near Anchorage, they originally pegged that at 8.7 or something. But then when the U.S. Geological Survey went in there and measured how much land was shifted with the doing their just basic surveying of the ocean bottom that rose up, Kodiak Island rose and parts sunk down, they had to repeg it 9.1. So
I think I misspoke. I think this lady is from the California Institute of Technology, which is, the same. They work together a lot. But
of course.
Ken, I know that you've seen your share of earthquakes, some pretty large ones. Have you ever noticed the strange hue of the sky prior to, during, and after an earthquake?
Well, no, personally I haven't, because in all cases when we were, experiencing an earthquake, we were inside at the time. But you're bringing up something important, that there is energy release. There's in an earthquake, particularly at, let's say, the fault line. Many photographs have been taken that prior to the actual discharge of an earthquake, for instance, sometimes at night, there was such a large discharge of energy release in the forms of photons that the area, you know, lit up. And I saw photographs of this. And sometimes even without the actual earthquake, if you're in a location where there are faults below you, these particles are being released. And dowsers, for instance, know that you can douse for what are called ley lines and fault lines.
Yes.
You know, there's different systems of these fault lines, but by usually dowsing L rods, we could find them in the house, and there's energy being released at that line. And if two of these energy releasing lines cross each other, there's an intensification of this vortex of energy at that point. So you don't, the reason we check this in dowsing is that you don't really want your bed at that vortex point. You don't want your favorite, you know, recliner chair that you watch TV from at that vortex. We try to identify these ley line locations, so when we're placing a bed or a table or chairs, etc., they can be in the null zone in between them and not, you know, actually on a line, because that's again, it's affecting your immune system, it's affecting your aura, etc. Mm-hmm. And people, studies have been done, they've traced cancers to given location, a given street, a given house. You know, tenant after tenant after tenant is getting cancer because the location of the bedroom, for instance, was right on overlapping of these ley lines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, typically the bed is right there where the strongest vortex is crossing each other. And if people, you know, were aware of this, anyone can learn how to douse. There's plenty of good books on it. I have a short, small one on my website from Walt Woods called Letter to Robin. You can identify these zones.
Yes.
Very simple device.
Now, what you're saying is very accurate, and I know from personal firsthand experience that to the north, let's say if you're in the northern hemisphere, that to the north of these ley lines, which are electromagnetic grids that move all around the planet, to the north of a particular line in the proximity, the vortices spin in a clockwise direction, and to the south, they spin in a counterclockwise direction. Now, if you had to choose which side of the ley line you would place your bed or a certain piece of furniture, maybe a sofa or a desk or just a lounge chair, you should try to get it where it's spinning counterclockwise. You can do this with a simple pendulum that you can make with a ring that you own and a chain. You can hang it and just ask it to show you the direction of the vortexial spin, and you'll see it begin to spin either clockwise or counterclockwise. Now, consider that if you were going to build a new home and you studied the ley lines, you could design your whole home so that you wouldn't end up with the optimal place for your sofa in your living room right in front of the front door. You know, that's sort of what happens. But I mean, if you think about it, it's very real. I can assure you that this can be demonstrated. If you're going to stir your coffee, stir it counterclockwise, and you add life force to it, because the counterclockwise motion lets off this life force. And we can then connect with it.
Yes, while you're mentioning using this information or knowledge to lay out a home or building, for instance, I might mention to you that there's an important structure that was built in the 1950s here in Southern California, in an area called Giant Rock, which this is a man named George Van Tassel, who was visited by friendly extraterrestrial aliens in the early 50s. And they revealed some important information to him during that visit. And he, following their directions and plans over many years, it was engaged in the construction of a structure called the Integratron, which is still located there. It's near Joshua Tree, California. I was there about 7 years or so ago, and I spent quite a bit of time talking to a fellow who was a close associate of George Van Tassel, who was still alive, and I spent time at the Integratron Center. Well, anyway, when the area was laid out, I found out later from Bob Beck, of all people, that Bob Beck was involved in that endeavor, because he knew George Van Tassel and had recorded many of the incredible events that took place at Giant Rock when George was alive, and he had his yearly get-togethers with the UFO crowds, and typically extraterrestrials came visiting, and they put on quite a show for them. Anyway, in building the Integratron, a very important radionics pioneer by the name of Hieronymus had played a role in laying out, again, he's using a dowsing pendulum to find the ideal location for that Integratron. And I think it was Bob Beck who told me that, of all people, Hieronymus, who's passed away but has a very important reputation. His wife lived a few years after him, and she continued to, and I think he has a daughter who continues to get out information about his work. Anyway, that's what they did in order to be sure that this Integratron had to be free of these energy vortexes from these fault lines, that Hieronymus spent a great deal of time getting the exact location and orientating, although the building overall is a round shape, orientating the structures in the interior so that they, you know, were not in any way interfering with the Earth's natural magnetic field, or in any way was in the cross currents of one of these ley lines or vortex lines that are everywhere on the Earth. You have running water under the Earth that creates an energy field above the running water that pervades, goes right through the surface. And, so it's a very important area that we're touching on. I'm sure ZS has a great deal to add to this this conversation, because he's pretty adept.
Yeah, I've doused the Hartman and Curry lines, and also used Slim Sperling's technique for diverting them away from the house. But I also work with the air elementals in setting up protective shields around homes.
Mm-hmm. Now you're speaking about sylphs or
sylphs? Yeah. Yes. Okay. Well, generally with the whole elemental app. Elemental action, because you have to work with the earth elemental as well as the air and water if it's nearby.
Yeah, and the earth elementals tend to be in wherever we find minerals, which is an interesting phenomenon, because when we take minerals out of the earth, we are displacing those elementals and bringing them into the third dimension, which is kind of unnatural for them. Any thoughts on that? I know that one can meditate on restoring those connections, but not everybody's doing that. So,
yeah. Well, we've done geomancy work in this area to address some of the problems that were created in the past through conflicts with the native people here and between native tribes and the white man coming in, which upset the local magnetic vortex, which I'm sitting on the side of right now, which is causing a magnetic compass to move, is actually spinning 13, 14 degrees, or is deviated 13, 14 degrees clockwise because of the strength of the magnetic field 5 miles away. And in working with that type of geomancy, we have trying to set the elemental kingdom back into the place where it wants to be, instead of being forced where man wants it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of healing action on that, and it's basically prayerful ceremony and asking and seeking permission and finding the reasoning out the best solution for the problem. And we had a master geomancer from Slovenia here 4 years ago, Marko Pogačnik, and he did a lot of work into what he called the Shuswap Holon, and that has to do with earth healing as well. And in doing so, he actually in the clearing action that happened a few months later, we had this very spectacular thunderstorm, which was like 2,000 or 3,000 strikes of lightning in an hour on the mountaintops all around the valley here.
Wow.
And that broke an ancient condition and cleared the air. And the magnetic vortex doubled in strength in that time period. It was over 20 degrees deviation for a period of 6 months. And so the elemental healing and shielding for this area, it was immense from his work.
Mm-hmm. Now, not to change the topic, but you're talking about the earth and magnetic fields. I received a fairly recent update, not too many days ago, that the magnetic pole, the North Pole, has shifted some 50 feet towards the Soviet Union. Now, we've been hearing all kinds of stories about cataclysms occurring when this happens, and we haven't been experiencing them, but it is starting to have an impact on compass readings for pilots. And I would presume that that's both flying, landing, and taking off. Either of you want to comment on that?
Well, in northern Canada, they haven't been able to trust the magnetic compass here because, of course, the North Pole was in the Canadian archipelago. And because of iron ore and other magnetic anomalies, compasses would go crazy over the Northwest Territories or the Canadian archipelago. So they've had to do radio signals, radio tower signaling in the night up till the time when GPS came in. And so I don't understand why they're talking about magnetic compasses in Florida when when here they don't trust compasses at all.
Yeah, well, you're referring to them redoing the runways. Is it in Miami, I think?
Well, maybe. It just doesn't make, with GPS, it doesn't make sense at all.
Yeah, exactly. But at least to measure that or to sense that, I can tell you as far back as 1999, 2000, I couldn't get steady compass readings in Ohio.
Right.
North seemed to have moved or shifted to northeast and tipped backwards, if you want to call it that, or upwards.
Right. Well, it could be a local vortex in your area because Ohio does have vortexes. Mm. The mound builders built on vortexes, serpent mounds, going back to the Hopewell and the Adena people there.
Yes. Well, we know they're all over the place, that's for sure. But they seem to know where the ley lines are before they build lots of cities, the large cities that cut across from the East Coast through the Midwest. They follow a consistent parallel.
Right. Yeah. I, of course, going to Boy Scouts and Boy Cubs, and we're supposed to do that. And in the 50s and 60s, I wasn't able to get a good compass reading, even with a good compass.
Hmm.
And that was
you got your compass out of the Cracker Jacks box, right?
No, I had one of those brass ones that about 2 inches across.
Mm-hmm. Now, I made a psychometric compass, which is basically a cork that has a needle through it, pushed all the way through it, balanced, and floating in a glass of water.
Right.
And you can ask it questions about vortices or about the poles, and it will respond accordingly.
Oh, wow.
It's a really simple, easy device. You have to buy a bottle of wine to get it to work. So it has its drawbacks, you know.
You didn't dump it down the toilet?
Oh, no, I didn't do that. No, I invited a few people over. If I had known you back then, I would have invited you for a glass or two.
I have drank very, very little. I'm almost 60 years old, and I have never been drunk. That's part of my training.
Yes, yes. Well, I'm not saying to get inebriated. a glass of wine does the blood well if it's the right kind of wine, you know. So anyway, not that we want to be talking about wine per se, but just to use the example of the wine bottle cork or any other bottle that has a similar cork in it, you know.
Okay.
Go ahead, Ken.
Yeah.
From my point of view, that psychometric action is actually an elemental, water elemental working with you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Or it could be a fire elemental working with a magnetic.
Well, yeah. Yes, actually, yeah, go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, actually, I was going to also just wanted to add a few points about the subject of elementals, because ZS talked about Sylphs particularly yesterday and again today, and mm-hmm. there are, I'm sure, many people who will listen to this show and not be aware of this group of beings, we might call them, which are referred to as elementals. And some people, when they hear this sort of conversation, become suspicious and concerned. Elemental beings are beings that assist Mother Earth to caretake the Earth, so that you have a kingdom that's devoted to shepherding and doing yeoman's work in the atmosphere. And those groups are properly called sylphs. You have another group that's devoted to caretaking in the sea, in the oceans of the world, and they have a name, Undines. And there's another group that's devoted to working with plants and forced growth of any sort of plant life. And there's another group that works with the mineral kingdom. And there's yet another group that works with fire, because all the basic elements, earth, wind, fire, et cetera, they all have an associated elemental group. These groups of beings have nothing to do with demons, okay? There's nothing dark, negative, demonic about any of these beings. It's another type of life that normally we can't see, except in certain circumstances, fire elementals, given the right circumstances, will manifest, and you can see a creature that's literally what looks like a tongue of fire.
Mm-hmm.
I have photos. There was a fellow who contacted me a few years ago who had joined my forum, who was building what are called Indian medicine circles, and he had the talent and the knowledge to elicit fire elementals, and it's unbelievable to see this. But again, I want to remind folks who, let's say, have more of a fundamentalist background, this has nothing to do with the devil or Satan or demons, okay? This is not the realm that I'm talking about. These are not necessarily, let's say, highly spiritual creatures like an angel. I'm not saying that either. But they are caretakers of the earth. They are not necessarily negative. Their function is to act as nurses and caretakers.
Yeah.
Of their domain.
Yeah, simply put, Ken, the spiritual essence of the creation enters all aspects of the creation. And just because a rock appears to be dead doesn't mean it doesn't have any consciousness. And that's a stretch for a lot of people, too. Now,
yes, it is. But you're absolutely what you just said is absolutely true.
See, and the elementals that both of you are referring to can exist in the earth. They're more, let's say, second dimensional beings. They interface with nature and with the people. They can interface with us. You can communicate with them. We've demonstrated this on all the chemtrail shows that we've done, and we've taken pictures of these beings actually giving themselves an appearance to let us see that they're there. I mean, it's uncanny to witness right. this, or to see a group of people. I shared a story a year and a half or 2 years ago about this with you, Ken, on a show, where I influenced two rows of people in a baseball stadium to work on the chemtrails, and we produced this gigantic sylph in the sky. we summoned it, let's say. Well, we had no idea what was going to show up, but I told the people, just give it a couple of minutes, and somebody started yelling, stood up, pointing their finger, look at the sky, look at the sky, what is that up there? It's a big head, and it's got eyes and a nose and ears and a mouth and a chin, and it's wearing a hat, you know, the whole thing, the very things that Ken and I have described.
Yes.
And after 15 or 20 minutes, the chemtrails were gone.
Yes.
They ate them up.
I do remember that. I got to say, though, you know, Z.S. Livingstone is an absolute expert in this area. Before I knew what a sylph was, before I saw a sylph, Z.S. had wrote essays about the coming of what he refers to as giant sylphs from other planetary systems
mm-hmm.
that were he had predicted were going to start showing up in 2004 to assist the resident population of Earth sylphs to battle the chemtrail poisoning operations. ZS, maybe you want to.
Well, they came to the assistance of the Earth sylphs because of they're being attacked by the Illuminati, the New World Order. Microwave radiations. They've actually been, because the sylphs have been doing a good job of cleaning up, and the people producing the chemtrails did not want them to do that. They are being deliberately attacked with electromagnetic beaming devices, and around all the nuclear facilities in. All around the world, well, mainly in the Western countries, there are protective or, well, there are little boxes on the chain link fence
mm-hmm.
which put out a pulsation or frequency which will actually keep the air elementals out. It's for the air elementals, it's like the sound is like fingernails on a chalkboard to them. It's very irritating, and but the other elementals plus the other elementals do have work of cleaning up the horrible pollution that's associated with nuclear power plants, and they're just doing Mother Nature's work and taking out the dark orc or the deadly ore
mm-hmm.
fields that are generated there.
Now, are you saying these boxes that surround the, let's say, the perimeter of a nuclear power plant are emitting, let's say, like a microwave
yes.
pulse? Or
that's been going on since the 1950s and 60s through the 70s. Also, those can be adjusted for mind control as well.
Hmm.
Yeah.
It's amazing what's going on. Well, gentlemen, we're almost out of time here. I want to give each of you an opportunity to sort of summarize your thoughts on these topics that we've talked about in terms of maybe an admonition to our listening audience as well as a solution. Ken, would you like to start out? Hello, Ken. Have we lost you?
I'm sorry. Oh. I had turned off my mute button.
Oh, okay.
In all cases, the universe, God, the creative force, always provides the solution at hand for every and any problem. This is a rule, if you will, that exists throughout the universe. You have to keep that in mind. No matter how bleak or dark or distressing circumstances may present themselves, the God force will always provide the solution close at hand. So you have to look for it. He's not going to tap you on the shoulder and say, here's the solution. But you have to be willing to hunt for the solution. It will be presented to you. So a famous herbal specialist, Dr. John Christopher, always says that in every case where in nature, wherever there was a poisonous plant that harmed animals or humans, growing right in the same vicinity was the antidote to that poison. And it's the same in our circumstances in life. When we're presented with problems, the solution is always there if you look for it. And in our case, with the New World Order, with the advancement of these systems, technologies, and agencies that are, you know, suppressing and repressing humanity and acting as controlling mechanisms, we always have an alternative. So never allow yourself to become morose or depressed or think there's no solution or we can't get out of it. The solution will always present itself. It helps a lot if you ask for divine assistance.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just sitting there like a rock and, you know, sort of waiting for someone else to come up with the answer, you simply ask for help, and then you engage in activity that moves you forward in a progressive way to seek out solutions. They thought that their proliferation of these cell phone towers and 2001 and 2002 and 3 and 4, they were going to get their mind control network all set up and it was going to be a slam dunk deal. And voila, out of the blue, Don Croft shows up in late 2001. He starts making these things called Chem Busters. And now we've got an army of people out there making these little tower busters, which ZS referred to earlier in the talk. And we're, quote, gifting these cell phone towers, which absolutely neutralizes and cripples this mind control aspect. It doesn't stop the signal from a cell phone communication from taking place, no. But it is changing the energy signature of what ZS just referred to, of the negative polarity of orgone into the positive polarity, which has the side effect of canceling out this mind control function. Now, this work has been done most of North America, so essentially we've sidestepped that deal. Now, of course, they also thought their chemtrails were going to be a slam dunk deal, and that was going to, you know, get us all nicely poisoned up and set up for the kill here. That hasn't worked out either. Why? Because, let's say, the orgone generator movement, and then the sylphs stepped in because they're aided by orgone generators.
And so did the United Galactic Federation.
Exactly. There is always help. There's many federal aliens who are assisting. There are many hidden groups, humans, meditating monks. There's all kinds of people who we know nothing about because they're not talking about what they're doing on the internet, but they're out there aiding humanity. And nothing helps more than participating by holding thoughts, positive thoughts, which will neutralize and overcome the dark agenda. That's called prayer.
Mm-hmm.
You can just silently meditate or just think positive, affirmative thoughts every single day that we will defeat the New World Order, and it will happen. Thoughts create reality, and more people need to know that.
That's very well said, Ken. ZS, your closing comments, please.
I say ditto to Ken.
You're a man of many words. Can you say it in fewer words? Ditto.
Thank you. Thank you, Ken. my I mentioned briefly about my path and avoiding liquor and all that sort of thing has actually been the path of finding God within, finding Christ. When I doubt, I'm asking Christ for answers, or high self, or whatever you, terminology. I'm always going to the highest principle. And on the way, I found all sorts of amazing things. Looking for the truth and looking for the answer, then you see the whole panorama of God's creation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I've had people have a question, where did you learn what you learned? I said, I learned what I learned from seeking the kingdom of heaven, then all things will be added unto you.
Yes.
That's my training.
Yes, and we have the answers inside us already. We just need to look within and make that connection. Well said, gentlemen. It's been a pleasure doing these two shows back-to-back discussing these topics. I appreciate the work that you're both doing. To read Z.S. Livingstone's work, you can go to educate-yourself.org. That's Ken Adachi's website, and no need to repeat the web address. Gentlemen, I look forward to having you on the show again soon so we can continue some more discussions about issues that are affecting the whole planet, the people, and sorting things out to get at the truth. I hope you both will come back soon.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you.
All right, folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. And our two guests tonight, Ken Adachi and Zora Nova Star Livingstone. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network for broadcasting Evident Footprints. Over at BBSRadio.com, we want to thank Seth Hendrick on the sound tonight, Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Be sure tomorrow to tune in for my special guest, scientist inventor Jim Murray. We're going to have a very interesting discussion, and you don't want to miss that. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.